31. The Prototype. Monday morning in Neil's yard, she keeps the Blue Ant phone on and nearby while she works through her program. It rings while she's on the pedipole, a device that makes her think of Leonardo's drawing of the human body's proportions as they relate to the universe. Her palms, fingers spread, are pressing down into black foam stirrups. The woman using the nearest reformer frowns. "Sorry." Case lets up the springs, releases the stirrups, retrieves the phone from the pocket of the Rixons. "Hello?"
"Good morning. It is Negemi. Are you well?"
"Yes, thanks. And you?"
"Indeed well. Stephen King's Wang ships today. I am very excited."
"From Maine?"
"From Memphis," she hears him smack his lips.
"Hobbs phoned. He says he has what you need, and now it is up to you. Shall we visit Mr. Greenaway and pay his ugly price?"
"Yes, please. Can we do it now?"
"He will not open until 11. Shall I meet you there?"
"Please." He gives her the number in Bond Street.
"See you there."
"Thank you." She places the phone at the blonde wooden base of the pedipole and gets back into position. If there's any one thing about England that Case finds fundamentally disturbing, it is how class works. A word with a very different mirror world meaning, somehow. She's long since given up trying to explain this to English friends. The closest she can come is that it's somewhat akin for her, if only in its enormity, to how the British seem to feel about certain American attitudes to firearms ownership, which they generally find unthinkable and baffling, self-evidently wrong, and so often leading to a terrible and profligate waste of human life. And she knows what they mean, but also knows how deeply it runs, the gun thing, and how unlikely it is to change, except, perhaps, gradually and over a very long time. Class in England is like that for her. Mostly she manages to ignore it, though there's a certain way they can have on first meeting of sniffing one another's cast out that gives her the willies. Catherine, her therapist, had suggested that it might in fact be because it was such a highly codified behavior, as were all of the areas of human activity around which Case suffered such remarkable sensitivity. And it is highly codified. They look at one another's shoes first, she's convinced, and Lucian Greenaway has just done that to Negemi, and doesn't like them. Slightly dusty black DMs, they're fat-proof, as advertised, air-cushioned soles, now planted firmly before this counter in Greenaway's shop, which is known simply as I. Greenaway. Quite large, Negemi's DMs, Case thinks, estimating a British size 11. She can't see Greenaway's shoes behind the counter, but if he were American, she guesses they might be toe-cleavage loafers with tassels. Though they wouldn't be that here, something by a Savile Row maker, but she guesses not bespoke. She's met people here who can distinguish workable buttonholes on a suit cuff at 20 feet.
"I have to ask you, Miss Pollard, if you're entirely serious about this."
I. Greenaway is the sort of shop you must be buzzed into, and Greenaway himself looks as though his toe might be hovering over a button that would summon large helmeted men with truncheons. "Yes, Mr. Greenaway, I am." He looks at her black nylon flight jacket.
"You are a collector?"
"My father." Greenaway considers this.
"I don't recognize the name. Curtis, rather a small field."
"Mr. Pollard," says Negemi, "a retired American government official with a background in the sciences, has a number of Type 1s, all dating from 1949 and, of course, numbered below 300. And several Type 2s as well, chosen primarily for condition and case variety."
The thumbnail of Wynne not inaccurate is the result of his gentle questioning on the pavement outside. Greenaway glares at him.
"May I ask you a question?" Negemi inquires, inclining slightly forward, with an audible creak. "A question?"
"A question of provenance. Hestock was known to keep 3 prototypes in his home in Nedeln, Lakenstein. Upon his death in 1988, they are known to have been sold to a private collector."
"Yes."
"Would the one on offer be one of those, Mr. Greenaway? I found the description on your website somewhat ambiguous in that regard."
Case watches Greenaway redden slightly.
No, it would not. It is from the estate of a master machinist and comes with extensive documentation, including photographs of it in the hands of both Herstock and the machinist, its fabricator. The three from the house in Nedeln are numbered 1, 2, and 3 in Romans. The one on offer is number 4. His expression perfectly neutral. He continues to stare at Nagami with what Case takes to be absolute loathing. In Romans.
May we see it, please? Case asks.
Master machinist, says Nagami. Fabricator. I beg your pardon, says Granaway, who clearly doesn't. When exactly was this prototype fabricated, then? Nagami smiles blandly.
And what are you implying by that?
Nothing at all, Nagami raises his eyebrows. In 1946? 47? 1947.
Please show it to us, Mr. Greenaway. Case tries again.
And how would you propose to pay, were you to decide to purchase? I'm sorry, but I can't accept a personal check unless I'm acquainted with the buyer.
The Blue Ant Visa, ready in her hand, is withdrawn from the Rickson's pocket and placed on the rectangular blotter-like suede pad atop Greenaway's counter. He peers at it, obviously puzzled by the Egyptianate ant, but then, she guesses, makes out the name of the issuing bank.
I see. And your credit is adequate for the price of the piece, plus VAT?
That's a very insulting question, says Nagami levelly.
But Greenaway ignores him, watching Case. Yes, Mr. Greenaway, but I suggest you check now with the issuer. Actually, she isn't entirely sure, but vaguely remembers Big End mentioning that she is authorized to buy automobiles, but not aircraft. Whatever other faults Big End has, she doubts he's prone to exaggeration. Greenaway is looking at them now as though they were in the process of robbing him at gunpoint, assuming that that process would cause him neither fear nor anxiety, just a sort of irritated amazement at their effrontery.
That won't be necessary, he said. We'll find out during the authorization process.
May we see it now, please?
Nagami places his fingertips on the counter, as if laying claim to something. Greenaway reaches beneath it, coming up with a gray cardboard box. It is square, perhaps 6 inches on a side, and has 2 U-shaped wire fasteners that protrude through slots at the edges of the lid. It is probably much older than she is. Greenaway pauses, and she imagines him counting silently. Then he lifts the lid away and puts it to the side. The calculator is cushioned in funereal gray tissue paper. Greenaway reaches into the box, draws it carefully out, and places it on the suede pad. It looks, to Case, very similar to the ones she's seen in Baranov's trunk, though perhaps less finely finished. Nagami has produced a loop and screws it carefully into his left eye. He leans forward, creaking, and gives the kurta his full and cyclopean attention. She can hear his breath now and the ticking of the dozens of clocks all around her, which before she'd not been aware of.
"Hmm," says Nagami, and more deeply.
Sounds she imagines are quite unconscious. He seems in that moment to be very far away, and she feels alone. He straightens, removing the loop, blinks.
I will need to handle it. I will need to perform an operation.
You're entirely certain you're serious about this? You wouldn't simply be winding me up, you two, would you?
No, sir, says Nagami. We are serious.
Then go ahead.
Nagami picks up the calculator, first turning it over. On its round base, Case glimpses IV, stamped into metal. Writing it, his fingers slide over it, moving those studs or flanges in their slots or tracks. He pauses, closes his eyes as if listening, and works the little peppermill crank at the top. It makes a slithering sound, if a mechanism can be said to slither. Nagami opens his eyes, looks at the numbers that have appeared in small circular windows. He looks from them to Greenaway.
Yes, he says.
Case indicates the Blue Ant card. We'll take it, Mr. Greenaway. A block from I. Greenaway, Nagami carrying the boxed calculator against his stomach as though it contained the ashes of a relative, Baranov is waiting, a half-inhaled cigarette screwed into the corner of his mouth.
That's it?
Yes,
says Nagami.
Authentic?
Of course.
Baranov takes the box. These are interesting as well. Nagami unzips his black coat and withdraws a brown envelope. Documentation of provenance.
Baranov tucks the box beneath his arm and takes the envelope. He hands Case a business card.
The Light of India Curry House. Pool. She turns it over. Rust-colored fountain pen. Neat italics. Stellanor@armaz.ru.
The eyes behind the round lenses fix Case with contempt, dismissal.
Baltic oil, is it? Thought you might be a bit more interesting than that.
He flicks his cigarette down and walks on in the direction they've just come, the Curta prototype beneath his arm and the brown envelope in his hand.
Do you mind my asking, Nagami says, what he meant?
No, she says, looking from the dung-colored back of Baranov's retreating jacket to the rust-colored email address. But I don't know.
This is what you wanted?
It must be, she says. I suppose it must be.